Welcome to Sankofa Radio. Welcome to Sankofa Radio, where we travel through the past before stop here at the present on our journey into the future. I'm your host, Sonny Yada Ray Vaughn, with my co-host, the Scarred Danso. Today's show, we will talk about propaganda. Peace, G. Scott.
What's up, my dude? Before we get started, you know, man, it's always customary that we give a dedication. Tonight, I'm going to give a dedication to the great Benjamin Banneker. Most people know him, as the person who helped landscape Washington, D.C., but why Benjamin Banneker is really as important as because of this fight against white supremacy. Benjamin Banneker, when Thomas Jefferson was Secretary of the State, he wrote a bunch of comments about black inferiority, and we know this Thomas Jefferson now today was a slave breeder. He was a controversial dude, you know what I'm saying? He had black children.
Yeah.
But Benjamin Banneker, he produced the Astronomy Almanac and sent it to Thomas Jefferson, and he sent it to Thomas Jefferson to show that blacks weren't inferior. And he started a dialogue with Thomas Jefferson that was a little bit contentious. And ultimately, Thomas Jefferson got some respect for him, and he got some respect for what it is that blacks could achieve. And so he actually recommended that Benjamin Banneker be the one to survey Washington, D.C. And that's how come Benjamin Banneker was the one to actually survey D.C. So shout out to Benjamin Banneker. What's up, man? I can hear you. Can you hear me? Santiago. Okay, we lost Santiago, man. We'll probably get him back in a second. Santiago.
Yeah.
In the meantime, okay, right now. In the meantime, man, let's get this on cranked up, man, on propaganda.
Okay.
I wanted to build with you, man. Recently, man, I was watching this story out here in Oregon, Princeton, Oregon, about this cat, Amon Bundy. Matter of fact, I think maybe I'm gonna let you explain a little bit about what's going on out there, and then let's talk a little bit about media portrayals and how it is that certain people get the benefit of the media. So what exactly going on out there in Princeton, Oregon?
Okay. All right, this is going on out here in Oregon. This guy named Amon Bundy has decided to take over or seize this 186,000 acres of unclaimed public land from the FBI, from the United States government. It's called the Malheur National Wildlife Reserve. And this wildlife reserve was first claimed in 1908, and it was to preserve wildlife, the animals and the area, the landscape, and the landmass. And so the reason why Amon Bundy took over this area was because he felt that the government was misusing this land, or that they should use this land to give to the residents of that area, because they was mismanaging it, and that the residents could manage it right. He also felt compelled to seize this land with arms, mind you, because of a mistreatment, or what he perceived was a mistreatment that happened to some residents in the town, D. White and Stephen Hammond. And these guys, they got into a situation where their land was taken from them. Their land was taken from them due to unpayment of some sort. And so they had moved to California, and they had burned down some public land. They had committed arson. So they were sentenced because of this, and they were sentenced to like 5 years, but they had went on a run and went back to Oregon. And so Amon Bundy, he, felt their cause, and he felt that they was justified in doing what they did. He also felt that it was a harsh sentence. And so due to that, he decided, more measures need to be taken. And his thing was that if they did it to the Hammond brothers, then they would also do it to, the other residents there in Oregon. So he had seized this land, and actually, there's no standoff. The media had portrayed it initially as a standoff, but that was a media hype. There really wasn't no standoff. In all actuality, the police didn't even come. The FBI didn't even come out there. There was no standoff. You know, they are just, they said, the FBI said they're just keeping an eye on the activity out there. You know, they have negotiators who, you know, talking to Ammon Bundy and trying to retrieve the property back. But, you know, there's no police out there telling him to surrender, to come out with his hands up. You know, none of that.
Right. So, okay. Well, thank you for updating us. So that leads to the question, the elephant in the room. And I'm gonna get straight to the point because, first of all, when I seen media coverage of the story, I was shocked for one of how soft-handed they was being with these guys. But number two, I got the same information. I thought that it was a standoff, and then it came back later that it wasn't a standoff. They was negotiating. So let's tackle the elephant in the room. If these brothers were black, Hispanic, Arab, would they be getting the same benefit of the doubt from the media? Would they be looked at as liberationists, freedom fighters, people protecting the interests of the patriots?
Right.
Or would they be looked at as an enemy of the state? Would they be characterized as an enemy of the state, like the Black Panther Party was called terrorists?
Right.
You tell me what you think, man. What you think of Santiago? I mean, let's be real about this.
I mean, there's no question in my mind. There would be a whole different portrayal if Ammon Bundy was a black man or Hispanic man or even an Asian man. You know, if you know, from history, from what history has taught us, from the patterns set by the media and United States government and the local police department, had it been, you know, somebody of original hue, there would have been, you know, a real standoff. You know, the media would have covered it, just like you say, with these more aggressive terms, slanderous terms, things like radicals, insurrectionists have taken over, cruel, all these crazy slurs, you know, to portray these guys. And you know, I don't even think they would be alive today. They probably would have had snipers out there when they shot these guys down. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Would have shot him down, and so yeah, it is a bias. If you're asking me, you know what I'm saying? There's a blatant bias, and there's a patience when it comes to Caucasian or white Americans' acts of sedition or protesting, radical protesting. You know, you see it even with college students after a game like Michigan. When Michigan played Ohio, you know, you had the college students out there tearing up the city, throwing rocks at the police, burning down cars, you know, and they said it was angry protesters. They weren't protesting, it was riot, you know what I'm saying? That was a riot, you know. So they always use this media-friendly, this passive, soft journalism when it comes to white Americans, but when it comes to black, it's always more angry and ugly, more harsh. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Let me jump in for a minute and ask you a question because I'm inclined to agree with you, right? But then there's always those who say that we're extreme and that them dudes just only blackish. You know what I'm saying? But you know, obviously, you know, from our experiences, we have a different perspective and worldview. But nevertheless, looking at the media, looking at the purpose of the media, the evolution of the media in this country. How it used to be an instrument of a bridgeway of communication by the state to the people, and what it's evolved to in the corporate world, right? Okay.
Right.
How do you think the media? The question I want to ask you, man. How do you think the media sees its audiences? Meaning, do you think they see the audiences more as citizens, or you think they see the audiences more as consumers? And what does that mean for the audience? You know what I mean?
Wow. Hey, that's a very powerful question right there. I think they see the audience as unintelligent. I think the media has become so audacious in their stories and their reporting and their journalism that they actually feel like they can tell the American public what they want to tell them. And that the American public will listen to them, that they will not ask questions, you know, that they will not... it was just accepted. They will not feel any type of uncertainty about the report. You know, I feel like the media has become so confident in what they put out that they don't feel that they would get no repercussions about it. I think now, thankfully through social media, we're starting to get more direct coverage, a contrast to what the media is portraying, which is now starting to expose the media for what they truly are. But just like you say, the media has been taken over, you know, through corporations, through satisfying a certain audience. You know, the audience
right.
who they're trying to tease more so is the white American audience, you know, or the corporate, or the corporate American audience, you know, because, man, that's deep, because now it goes to protecting interests. So when you want to protect somebody's interests, yeah.
Before we get that deep, before we get that deep,
yeah.
because I want to.
Okay, before you go in, I also would like to, what is propaganda to you? And do you think the media uses propaganda? And what purposes does propaganda show? And also add on to what you were about to say. You know?
Oh, yeah. Well, propaganda, essentially, man, is just, essentially propaganda is just messaging. You know what I'm saying? And propaganda ain't always bad. You got good propaganda, you got bad
right.
propaganda. You know what I'm saying? If there's a march against violence in the city of Richmond, and it's being, you know, promoted and shaped and framed in a certain way to get people to attend, to get people to support, to get people to do whatever, that's peace. You know what I'm saying? The issue becomes when propaganda is used somewhat diabolically, for lack of a better word, right?
Right.
And propaganda, as far as news media and TV media, corporate media in particular, has been used for real, to create consumers. Right, to expand consumerism. But we'll get to that in a minute, and that's what I wanted to talk a little bit about, putting this in context. First of all, when we talk about the media, mass media, what we're talking about is print, television, radio, and internet, you know what I'm saying, nowadays. And so the multiple mediums of communication, because we're talking about mass communication. Okay, now looking at American history, communication initially, the early forms of communication beyond directly me being able to just talk to you, was through writing, right? The printing press was the earliest form of media, and it was very important for literacy, right? That's why when you read old writings from people like Frederick Douglass or Thomas Jefferson or Benjamin Banneker, some of the guys I just mentioned, it seemed like you read some scholars, man. You know what I'm saying? They using language and words that we're not used to, because the level of literacy was so high back then, they didn't have many forms of media. So looking at where we are today, mass media, right, with television, movies, news, TV shows, the commercial, radio, right, with music, speeches, when you look at the print, when you look at electronic media, now there's so many ways that that messages can be communicated. And so when there's a small group of people that control a large portion of the means of communication, that's what we call corporate media. You know what I mean? And so the question we want to ask ourselves is, what is the interest of corporate media? What do they want? Right? What do they want? And what is their goal? What is their goal with the messaging and the content that they put out? Right?
Wow.
How are they?
Right.
What are they selling to the audiences when they do demographics? Right? How do they target you? So the question I want to ask you, thinking about that, and I just posed the question because I'm just, you know me, I like to make people think for a second before we come back. You know me.
That's
right. How has the media evolution affected the culture of literacy in America?
Wow. How has the media affected
its evolution from print to all of these different medium forms? How has that affected the culture of literacy in America?
Wow. Yeah, it had to cause a certain de-evolution to a degree in the exponential, sophisticated form that it was back in those days, because just like you say, those guys didn't have all these other distractions. So if literacy or writing, penmanship was their only way of expressing these thoughts and these ideas, and I would imagine that it had to be very powerful. It had to be very refined, because that's all they had to hone this skill. But now, through this quick, fast way, it's just like fast food versus a home cooked meal. You know, you gonna the fast food, it might be quick, fast, and convenient, but it's not that healthy for you. It's a little bit lesser. It's messy. It's high cholesterol. It's high fat, greasy, and so that's the same. It's cheaper. You know, and that's the same way the media is. You know, they put these images up all fast and quick. So now you don't have to really go to a newspaper or read or write no more. You're just getting this quick, fast fix of just people talking. And they can talk it in your language to make it more attractive. You know, they can spin it to you in a way where you'll be compelled to believe it. You know, so it reduces the literacy. It reduces the literacy and reading ability, you know, because they just now people don't even pick up a newspaper. Matter of fact, they're saying that newspapers, even though newspaper can be an outlet to still produce a certain propaganda that could be catered toward corporate agenda, if that's what they're doing, it's still more so people want to see it, you know, they want to hear it versus reading. So they say nowadays the attention span is like 2 minutes. And after 2 minutes, people become unattentive. So we see a vast de-evolution of, you know, the whole penmanship or literary art to a degree, from my perspective.
No doubt.
Right. And I think you asked the question, the corporate agenda. What is the corporate agenda? You know, if corporate America it's having an impact or influence on the media, what is the goal? I mean, what do they want? What is their whole purpose behind it? And
profit. At the end of the day, and so what? That's,
you have that's, 60 seconds.
Hello. Yeah. So if you have corporate America who has an interest, and their interest is to make a profit, then we see that everything that they produce or promote is going to be to influence you to continue to purchase their items and their products. You know, so corporate America is still manipulating and conceiving for their own interests.